shoulders. I put my face into the angle of his neck and smelled strength and safety. His hair was greyer and the lines in his face deeper. But this was my Da, and he had come to find me and take me home. I lifted my head to smile down at Perseverance. He was taller than he had been, and he looked stronger. He carried his knife before him, as my father had taught me a knife should be carried. He turned his head and looked up at my father. "Fitz, what are we doing? They will kill us!" Then the dream became nightmare. My father carried me toward Vindelire, not just walking, hurrying, as if he could not wait to get there. Capra, Felidy, and Coltry walked with Vindelire, and all of them were smiling. Capra clutched her belly, and a slow leak of blood showed on her garments, but still she smiled. They were so pleased with Vindelire, so certain they had won. I stared. Did they know of my fires roaring two floors above us? I suspected not. Vindelire had gathered them and brought them here. They knew only what his will was, and his will was my death. "Papa!" I shouted at him.
"Hush!" He patted my back. "You're safe, Bee. I'm right here."
I had held my walls so tight and so strong for so long that only now did I touch them and feel the force beating against them. I allowed myself to hear Vindelire's lure.
"Come to me. Come to us. Everything will be well. We are your friends. We know what is best. We will help you."
And my father was believing them. "Papa, walls up! Walls up!" I shouted the words desperately as I wriggled to get out of his arms. He looked down at me, and slowly a furrow grew between his brows. I think he was starting to realize what Vindelire was doing to him, but he was doing it too slowly. I kicked free of him, fell as I hit the floor, stood up, and pulled his big knife from its sheath.
"Kill her!"
Vindelire shrieked as he saw me seize the weapon.
"Kill Bee now!"
Not only his voice, but his magic pushed that thought, and the eyes of every person advancing toward us narrowed with hatred as they looked at me. The guards drew their swords, and even Capra drew a little belt knife. I looked up at my father, fearing to see that he, too, would have been turned against me by Vindelire's magic. But instead, I saw a terrible blankness on his face. I turned to face them, alone.
"No!"
Perseverance pushed me to one side as he charged forward. Not for an instant did he hesitate. The full force of his body was behind his knife as he drove it into Vindelire. Both went down, and Perseverance planted a knee on Vindelire's chest. I saw Per's elbow draw back and then punch the knife forward again. Vindelire's terrible pain burst in my mind, edging my thoughts in red. His desperate magic leapt in a new direction.
"No! Stop! Drop the knife! No! Don't kill me! Don't hurt me!"
So powerful was that sending that my father's knife fell from my suddenly nerveless hands. I was seized with the necessity of not hurting Vindelire. But no such compulsion stilled Perseverance. Vindelire's magic did not touch him. He stood up, drawing out the bloody knife as he did so, and shouted,
"No one will kill Bee while I live!"
He had grown stronger than the boy I had known at Withywoods. The terrific slash of his blade had the force of a swinging axe. The edge crossed Vindelire's throat, and blood flew out in an arc as it ripped free of his flesh. As Vindelire's magic failed and stilled, Per sprang back. He spun to stand in front of me, knife lifted in one hand and the other pushing me protectively behind him.
"Behind me, Bee!"
he commanded. Chaos broke out in the force facing us.
"Why are we here?"
Capra wailed, while Felody danced backward into his own guards in his desire to flee.
"Where?"
my father shouted and took a great stride past us. He stooped, snatching up the knife I had dropped. He had a hatchet in his other hand. He drove himself into the ranks of befuddled guards. He was suddenly among them, using both knife and small axe against their swords. I saw him hook a man's blade with the hatchet and force it down while he thrust his knife into the man's unguarded throat. His only hope was to be closer to them, inside the thrust or swing of their blades. His face was alight, his teeth bared, and his eyes brighter than I had ever seen them. Per remained between me and the melee. "Stay back," he warned me, but I cried, "They are too many for him. We must help him, or we will all die." They were engulfing him as if he were a boot sinking into mud. In the back of their force, something else was happening. I heard a woman screaming, not in pain, but in fury, as her filthy curses rang out in the hall. A man's deep shouting cut through her words.
"Drop him! Let him be!"
Simph's knife. I scrabbled to get it from under my shirt, then ducked under Per's arm and went for Felody with it. The great coward had turned away from the battle and was trying to get past the knot of fighters and flee. Perhaps I was as great a coward, for I tried to drive my knife into his back. The short blade skittered down his ribs as if they were a pole fence, and then found a soft place below his short ribs and above his hip. I sank the blade as far as I could, and then seized the haft with both hands and shook it from side to side. I accidentally pulled it free as he jerked away from me. I was much better at biting than knifing. Then Coltrey hit me. His open palm slapped the side of my head with tremendous force, and my crumpled ear roared at me. Felody was crawling away from me, making short, sharp shrieks. I turned to face Coltrey.
"You dirty little traitor," he shouted at me.
Madness was in his eyes.
"You killed Simph, and you killed poor dear Dwalia."
Vindelire's body was twitching on the floor behind Coltrey. I sprang at him, leading with my knife. He retreated to avoid me, stumbled on Vindelire, and fell backward. He kicked at me as I jumped at him, a glancing blow that still pushed me sideways and made me lose some of my breath. But I paid no attention to his flailing, slapping hands. I would put my knife into the middle of him, into his belly where coiled the parts he needed to live. Wolves always tore for the belly. I hit him too high. His breastbone stopped my blade. I pulled back my knife, and with both hands on the hilt, I drove it down again as he battered me with slaps. He wasn't very good at it. Dwalia had hit me harder than that. My knife punched into him. I leaned on it, trying to push it deeper. Coltrey grabbed my hair with both hands and pushed my head back. My head was not my hands. I dragged the knife as he shoved me away. The cracked paint on his face made him look like a ruined doll. Then someone else's knife carved across his throat. He didn't know he was dead. His lips writhed away from his bared teeth, and I lost some hair as I ripped myself free of him. I'd almost forgotten the other people fighting all around me. Per had hold of my upper arm and was dragging me back, shouting,
"Nobby! Stay clear! Don't get hurt!"
The knife in his free hand dripped red. My father was still engaged with the three guards that were trying to take him down. He was bleeding. Somehow he had gained a short sword, and his snarl was a joyous thing. Felody was still trying to crawl away. The guards had dropped the man they'd been carrying. The black man, Prilcop, stood over the fallen man, weaponless. Between those two and the remainder of the patrol, a man and a woman stood back to back, and the man was FitzVigilant. Lant was alive. A strange thrill ran through me. Was it all going to come undone, all my hurt and sorrow? My father had come to rescue me, and Perseverance was alive, and Lant, too. Was it possible to hope for Revel? Did I dare? Then a sword licked in and sliced into my father's thigh. He roared his fury, and it did not seem he could be hurt, for he swung his own blade so forcefully that it cut into the man's side almost to his spine. He jerked the blade out as another man cut at his head. He ducked that blow. "Help him!" I screamed, but Perseverance dragged me back.
"He can't fear for you,"
he shouted, and for a fleeting instant my father's glance flowed over me. Then I heard Capra screaming.
"Guard me! Guard me! Leave off and guard me!"
She had broken free of the melee to lean against the corridor wall, clutching her reddened belly. The five standing Clara's warriors abruptly sprang back from their engagements and formed up around her. She clutched at one of them, and he took her weight, helping her hobble along. The others kept their faces toward us, a bristling wall of blades. Capra stumbled, and the warrior picked her up. He carried her like a child as they backed away from us. Felodi howled at them to help him, and one of the guards seized him by an arm, pulled him to his feet, and dragged him off at a staggering run. My father stood, panting, his bloodied blade slowly drooping toward the floor as they retreated. Lance started to go after them, but the girl cried,
"No, let them go!"
And he listened to her. Capra's retreat saved us. As the curve of the corridor hid them, my father tottered sideways. Per left me and went to him, easing him down to the floor. My father was cursing furiously, clutching at the blood that welled between his fingers. I ran to him. Per was tearing his shirt off. It was the wrong kind of fabric. I wriggled my arm out of my sleeve and held it out to him. "Cut this off to use," I told him, and after a shocked moment, he did.
"Bee!"
Lant exclaimed as he came to my father. He looked down at me, and I looked up at him. His face was freckled with blood. I didn't think it was his. He looked as if he felt ill, and I thought I knew why. "You wanted to kill me, didn't you? It was Vindalaya's magic, not your fault. He could make people believe things, even me." My father spoke in a thick, tired voice.
"It was like the skill, but not. Magic used in a way I've never experienced."
I heard him swallow.
"How could he be that strong?"
"They gave him a potion made from serpent spit. It made him very strong. I could barely hold my walls against him."
"I couldn't hold my walls if it hadn't been for perseverance."
"I felt nothing," Per said. "I thought you had all gone mad," he muttered almost sulkily. He knelt by my father. "We should cut the clothing away from this."
"No time," Lance said. "That fire is spreading."
He knelt and took my sleeve from Per and wrapped it snugly around my father's thigh. He knotted it tight, and I heard my father groan. The sleeve went red. Then the girl I didn't know came to us, Beloved limping as he leaned on her shoulder.
"They're gone. They ran away,"
she was saying to him. Blood was running from the corner of his mouth, and his face was lopsided with bruises. But all he said was,
"Bee, you're alive."
He reached for me with claw-like hands, one gloved, and I shrank away.
"Bee, he won't hurt you,"
Prilcop said quietly. I had almost forgotten Prilcop.
"He would never hurt you,"
he repeated quietly.
"You are his."
Beloved turned his gloved hand toward me, palm up.
"Bee."
My name was all he said, in a slurred voice. I drew back from him. "I can't. He makes me see things when I touch him. I don't want to see things anymore." And it was true.
"I understand,"
Beloved said sorrowfully, and dropped his hands.
"Bee, he has a glove on one hand,"
Perseverance said very gently. "He has come a long, far way to rescue you." His voice reminded me of a long-ago day when he had said, "Shall I ready her for you?" and saddled the horse I was afraid to ride. But I was not that little girl anymore. I looked aside. I saw my father's expression. I was still holding Simph's knife. I wiped the blood from it and put it back in the waistband of my trousers. Slowly, I reached out my hand and set it on the back of Beloved's glove. "I gave you an apple," I said quietly. "Do you remember that?" His mouth shook.
"I do,"
he said, and tears welled and ran down his face.
"Oh, Bee, what have they done to you?"
Lant asked me. His eyes were moving over my face. My scars sickened him. I didn't want them to speak of that. I didn't want them to ask me questions about any of it. I looked at the dead guards scattered in the corridor. Blood was pooling around the corpses. The girl was moving among the bodies, looking for something. I saw her take a sword from a dead man's hand. Coltrey lay on his back, covered in blood and unmoving. I'd helped to kill him, and I didn't care. I hoped Felodi would die too, and in the far parts of the castle I still heard screams and crashes. Fire stops for nothing. Was I truly the destroyer? "We need to get away from here," I reminded them all. Didn't they understand that we could not stand here? I set fire to the libraries. It's spreading.
The libraries,
Beloved said faintly. He looked devastated as he stared down at me.
You burned the libraries of Clares?
They needed burning. Burn the nest to kill the wasps. My speaking my old dream made his eyes go wide.
The destroyer came,
Prilcop said quietly. Beloved looked from me to my father, and then back to me.
No, not her.
Yes. I pulled my hand back from touching him. He would not want to know me now.
Be,
he said, but I went to my father. I put my hand on his sleeve. We have to get out of here now, if we can. My father was trying to stand up. He gave me a crooked smile.
I know. We need to be moving. But first, are there any more like Vindalaya?
He was the only one, I think. They said they did not have much of the serpent potion left, but I think they lied to one another about that.
Could they make another Vindalaya?
Serpent potion?
Beloved asked. He had drawn closer to us, and Prilcop stood beside him. Prilcop spoke in his low, deep voice.
I have heard rumors of this. Is that what they gave to Vindalaya? It is made from the concentrated secretions of a sea serpent. There is an island where dragons used to lay their eggs. The eggs hatched into serpents that wriggled into the sea. Some very peculiar creatures live on that island. Sometimes they capture a serpent or two and hold it in captivity.
I was watching my father. He put a heavy hand on Lance's shoulder. His expelled breath made a horrid sound as he forced himself to rise. At first, his foot did not touch the ground. Then he set it deliberately to the floor and tested his weight on it. The red on his bandage darkened.
We need to get out of here. The fire will consume the upper stories first, and then it will all fall on us. We need to get outside, and then off the island.
It may not fall,
Prilcop suggested.
The bones of this strong house are stone, and it has stood through many a calamity. It is not the first time fire has visited here.
My father did not seem to be listening to Prilcop, so I ignored him as well. We started walking. I stayed close to him. My father expelled a harsh, short breath with each step on his bad leg, but he led us, slowly.
You should leave me behind, he said. Take B and run for the doors.
Run straight into their guards?
The girl asked him.
We aren't leaving you,
Per said quietly.
Sir, is there a way out of this castle, one that won't be guarded, or packed with fleeing people? She asked Prilcop. She glanced down at my father's leg as he limped along and said to me, We will need your other sleeve. Prilcop shook his head.
This strong house was designed to be easy to defend, not to escape. There are only three entrances. Those who have escaped the flames will flee down the main stairs and go to them.
I pulled my arm into my shirt and offered the girl the limp sleeve. She cut it off as we walked, her knife sliding easily through the fabric. Wait a moment, she told my father, and he halted. She knelt to add another layer to the seeping bandage on his leg, and a brief snarl passed over his face.
Let's go,
he growled, and limped on.
How do you get in to Clares?
Prilcop asked curiously. He walked beside my father. Beloved walked next to me. I think he wished to hold my hand, but Per was doing that. Then he let go of my hand.
I'm going ahead, Per said quietly. I don't like that we can't see around the curve here. The fool will take care of you, and Spark, and Lant.
He put my hand on Beloved's gloved one, and I let him. He sprinted ahead of us, staying close to the inner curve of the wall. I looked up at Beloved. He looked down at me and offered a cautious smile. It rippled his bruised face. I could not smile back. I let my eyes follow Per.
We came in by the waste chute on the low tide.
It will be flooded with water now. No use to us until late afternoon. I don't think the fire will give us that long.
Lant asked Prilcop, Do you know of a concealed tunnel under the causeway? The fool believes he was taken out of Clara's that way.
We were moving, but not swiftly. The scattered bodies of the fallen guards partially blocked the hall. Our bare feet left bloody footprints on the formerly pristine floor as we left the battle behind us. Purr was ranging ahead of us, staying close to the wall and trying to peer around the curve of the corridor. He held a short sword in one hand and his knife in the other. He reminded me of a small hunting creature. I wondered if I was as changed as he was. When he went out of sight, I caught my breath. I wanted him back right now.
Beloved was limping, his other hand on the girl's shoulder. She held a looted sword and a knife.
You're bleeding, I said to her. She didn't even look at the slice on her forearm.
It will stop, she said quietly. She smiled at me.
Hello, Bee.
I'm Spark.
I came a long way to meet you.
Prilcop was talking.
The tunnel is old, built when an emperor first constructed Clara's and severed the peninsula to make it an island. When I was a boy here, it was not a secret. In those days, the servants lived simply and had no thought of needing guards or a secret escape route, and it wasn't used. I know that Beloved was taken out through that tunnel as much to avoid Capra knowing as to maintain the pretense he had escaped.
He looked at Beloved as he added,
They took great delight in telling me what they had done, how they had crippled and maimed you to make every step an agony. Even so, they knew you would go to him. They trailed you, like slow hounds, not to help, only to keep you from failing. You know that now, don't you?
I guessed it then, he said in a low voice, but I had no other path.
He was the one who had led them to me, and now he held my hand. I saved that bit of information.
The tunnel under the causeway? Spark prompted Prilcop impatiently.
It's very old. It dates back to the creation of Clara's as an island. The emperor who constructed it wished to have a secret egress in case the castle was besieged and falling. When they cut away the land and pared down the peninsula to make Clara's an island, they cut a trench in the stony earth and roofed it over, and then built the causeway over it. When the tide covers the causeway, it may leak or fill. I don't know. It's considered a secret now, and not spoken about.
He smiled grimly. Spark scowled.
But is it at a higher level than the way chute, or lower?
Higher. Prilcop shook his head. It was years ago that they released Beloved. It may be collapsed now, after Beloved's escape. Capra was so furious that she had it bricked up.
There was a smile in the girl's voice as she said,
Bricks will not stop us, if you know where it was.
We heard a distant crash behind and above us. We all flinched. My father limped faster. Beloved's voice was soft and flat, with a sort of dread.
Prilcop, how is it you know so much of what has been going on in Clara's?
The black man gave a bitter laugh.
I did not betray you, Beloved. Once you were gone, they believed they had all they needed and were finished with me. Hence the better lodgings and cessation of torture. They took my dreams as I wrote them down. Several times they tried to induce me to contribute to their breeding program. My dreams and my seed were all they valued of me. One of the night guards was assigned to seduce me. Instead, we became friends. She gave me news, but only what she knew of Clara's. The four do not encourage news of the outside world here. For the white spawn here, Clara's is all they know.
Purr came sprinting back to us, panic on his face.
We cannot escape this way, he whispered hoarsely. Ahead is a grand staircase. People are running down it,
and crowding at the bottom and milling like corralled cattle in the room before the outer doors. There is no escaping that way. The main doors are locked. I could not get to the front of the mob, for folk are trampling and pushing and hurling themselves against the doors. He gasped in a breath. I ran past them down the next corridor, but there I saw a troop of guards. They were opening each locked chamber and searching it. I think they are looking for us. They saw me, but I raced away from them. They didn't follow. I think they thought me just another slave, but they will come this way soon. I spoke as he drew breath. They are seeking me. Vindelire said he had burned it into their minds. They will not stop until they find me and kill me. For a long moment, none of them spoke. The sounds of the fleeing people came faintly to us. Per sheathed his knife and took my hand. My father spoke, but he sounded like a different man, one who thought only of what must happen next, without emotion.
Fool, lead us back to the dungeons.
It was Prilcop who spoke.
It is two doors ahead of us, on the left, and I must go there too. We left the other prisoners still locked in their cells when Vindelire sent his magic to draw us to him.
His voice dwindled away. My father sounded impatient. And down there is the bricked-up entrance to the causeway tunnel?
Yes, it is also there, on the lower level. We need to get there and secure the doors before the guards come. Run!
My father ordered, and we did, but only as fast as he could limp. The moment we reached the second door and Lant opened it, Prilcop darted in and disappeared from sight. My father seized Lant's shoulder. Lant, secure this door and the one to the lower level. Barricade the steps with whatever you can find.
Per and Fool, guard B with your lives.
He unslung a harness from across his shoulders. It had pockets with little pots in them. He removed two of them.
Spark, take these. Have Prilcop show you the bricked-up entry. If nothing else works, blast it open. Get B back to the ship.
He put the little pots into her arms. She cradled them like a baby while looking up at him wide-eyed.
B, listen to Lant and the Fool. Obey them. They will get you to safety.
But Fitz,
Beloved said in a broken voice,
there's no time to argue. Keep your promise to me.
My father's voice was the harshest I'd ever heard it. Beloved's gasp sounded like a sob.
Papa, I said. I held to the cuff of his sleeve. You promised me. You said you'd never leave me again.
I'm sorry, B.
He looked at all of us.
I'm sorry. Get inside. Hurry.
But at the last moment, he reached over and set his hand on my head. I do not think he knew what would happen. The touch broke our walls. I felt him. I felt his disappointment in himself. He did not feel he deserved anything from me. Not to touch me, or even to say that he loved me. For he had failed so badly at being my father. It stunned me. It was like a second wall beyond his skill walls, something that prevented him from believing that anyone could love him. Wolffather spoke to both of us.
You would not feel so terrible if you had not loved her so recklessly. Without limits, be proud of our cub. She fought. She killed. She stayed alive.
I felt Wolffather leap from me to my father. I heard his parting words.
Run, cub. We stand and fight like cornered wolves. Follow the scentless one. He is part of us. Protect each other. Kill for him, if need be.
As the wolf went to him, I felt the surge of joy that linked those two. They would stand and fight, not just for me, but because it was what they loved to do, what they had always loved to do. My father stood a bit straighter. They both looked at me from his eyes, puzzlement and pride, and love of me. It poured out of my father as uncontrollable as the blood seeping from his wound. It drenched me and filled me. He lifted his hand from my head. Did he know how he had revealed himself? Did he understand that Wolffather had been with me all those days?
and now returned to him. Almost gently, he peeled my grip from his cuff. He spoke.
Please, Lant, take B. Take the fool. Take all of them. Get them safely home. It's the best thing you can do for me. Hurry.
He gave me the softest of pushes, away from him. He turned away from us, as if confident that we would obey. He turned and began to limp away.
Why?
I shouted at him. I was too angry to cry, I thought, but tears came anyway.
B, I'm leaving a blood trail that a child could follow. Per saw guards coming, searching rooms as they come. I will be sure they find me before they find you. Now follow Lant.
He sounded terribly tired and sad. I looked back the way we had come. His bloody footprints were plain on the once clean floor. He was right, and that only made me angrier. Lant stood by the open door.
Per, Spark, take them. I'm staying with Fitz. No, Lant, you won't. I need you with them, to be a sword, to protect them, and to use your strength to barricade that door.
Beloved didn't move.
I can't do this,
he said in a very soft voice. My father rounded on him.
You promised,
he roared. He seized the front of Beloved's shirt and pulled him close.
You promised me. You said you would choose her life over mine.
Not like this,
Beloved wailed.
Not like this.
Abruptly, my father seized him in a hug. He held him tight as he spoke.
We don't get to choose how it happens. Only that you save her, not me. Now go. Go.
He pushed him away.
All of you, go.
He turned and limped away from us. His hand left bloody prints on the wall, and his footprints were red on the white floor. He didn't look back. When he came to a door, he halted. We stood in frozen silence. I saw him take something out of his pocket, watched him fuss with the door handle. After a moment, he opened it. Just before he slipped inside, he glanced back at us. He made an angry motion and mouthed,
"Go!"
at us. Then he was gone. I heard him lock the door behind him. Of course. If we were hiding in that room, it was what we would do. There was blood on the floor outside that door, his bloody handprints on the wall and the door. The guards would think they had us cornered.
Get in here, Lant said in a dark and savage voice.
He took my shoulder and pushed me toward Beloved. I tottered numbly along with him. Per came beside me. I heard him sob once. I understood. I was crying too. As the door began to close behind us, Per spoke in a hoarse voice.
B, I am sorry, but I am the only one Lant won't need. Spark must set the fire pot. Prilcop knows where the tunnel is. Lant is strong and good with a blade, and the fool promised. And you, saving you is why we came all this way. But me, I'm just a stable boy with a knife. I can stay with Fitz and help him.
He sniffed.
Spark, quickly, come back to that door and unlock it for me.
Lant? She asked uncertainly.
Do it,
he said harshly.
After all, he's just a stable boy.
He cleared his throat.
A stable boy who killed Duke Elic to save Fitz's life. One who stood beside him when Fitz faced down a queen dragon.
Go, Per. Be sure he knows it's you. And when you've killed the guards, bring him back to us. Two knocks, then one, and I'll open this door without trying to kill you.
Yes, sir, Per said.
He looked at me. Good boy, B. I hugged Per. It had been a long time since I'd hugged anyone. It was even stranger to have someone hug me back so gently.
Thank you for killing Elic, I told him.
He was a terrible man.
You're welcome, Lady B,
he said, and his voice shook only a little. Prilcop was waiting for us.
The lad is terrified, he objected.
Lant spoke.
That's because he's as intelligent as he is brave. Go, Per.
All this talking, I heard Spark mutter angrily. Per, hurry.
But as she turned, she reached up and touched Lance's cheek. Then they left us. I stood beside Beloved in the dim room. Overhead, something fell with such a crash that the ceiling shook and bits of paint flaked down. He looked down at me and spoke so softly.
The Destroyer.
I could not tell if it was a compliment or a rebuke. Go down the steps, Lance said in a low voice. He closed the door behind us.
Chapter 36. Surprises.
No, I cannot agree with you that this work should be left to others. You and I, we are the only two with the necessary depth of knowledge to understand and correctly classify the skill cubes. In an excess of caution, Skill Mistress Nettle has removed from my safekeeping the sack of memory cubes I myself brought back from Aslevyal. She has given them over to a young journeyman and a team of apprentices. The task she has assigned is that the apprentices should briefly sample each cube, both to teach them how to use a memory cube and also to teach them the restraint needed to enter the skill flow and then to exit from it after a limited time. Each cube is then to be classified as to what it holds, be it music, history, poetry, geography, or another branch of knowledge. Each cube will receive a designation so that they can be kept in order. I consider a brief time in each cube to be inadequate. You and I both well know that a poem can be a history, and a history can be a flattering fabrication to tickle a ruler's vanity. You and I are the only ones who should be experiencing the cubes, creating clear pages that summarize what they hold and then storing them in order.
This is not a task to be left to inexperienced apprentices, and sampling the cubes before storage and classification is inadequate. I understand that the information they hold is vast. Even more reason that each cube should be explored completely by people with a broad base of knowledge.
Shade Fullstar, in a letter to Tom Badgerlock of Withywoods. I latched the door behind me. Then I leaned against it. Why had they made it so hard for me? Did they think I wanted to do this? To leave B yet again? I did not mean to slide down to sit on the floor, but I did. It hurt, but it probably hurt less than falling. I was light-headed. My body was demanding that I rest, that I sleep. After so many years, I was familiar with its aggressive healing. All my body's attention and resources were going to the slash on my leg, just when I needed to be alert. How bad was it?
It's bleeding less. Don't poke it.
Where have you been? I heard myself whisper the words.
With the cub, doing my best to help her, mostly failing. She is alive. That means you succeeded. She would be safer if you went back to her.
She is safer if we draw off the hunters and kill as many as we can. I had held back three of Shade's firepots for myself. I reached over my shoulder and took out the cracked firepot that I'd mended, put it back, and chose the other two. One had a blue fuse, long and slow, Spark had said. I wasn't sure I wanted it to burn slowly. I wasn't clear on what I was going to do with them. How slow was slow? I knew the guards would come.
Make all ready.
I looked around the darkened room. It was small, perhaps for private meetings. There were two small windows set high in the wall and no other door. A watery grey light told me that outside, dawn was breaking. As my eyes adjusted, I saw a table with two comfortable, high-backed chairs around it. In the middle of the table, there was a little pot lamp made of glass and painted with flowers. A lovely, welcoming room. An assassin's dream. I got to my feet, not quickly and not without curses, but I did it. I set my pack on the table and opened it. The folded paper of Caris seed was on top. Very little left. I dumped it in my hand, tossed it into my mouth, and ground it between my teeth as I set out the firebrick. The heady rush of the Caris seed flooded me. Good. I drew the wick most of the way out of the lamp and set it on the firebrick. It warmed immediately, and soon the wick began to smolder. Someone tried the door handle. Out of time. I'd planned to have the lamp lit, ready to light the fuse. Instead, I uncoiled the fuse from the firepot and set it on the brick. Almost immediately, a tiny spark danced on it. A flame leapt and then died back to a steady red glow. The lock rattled once, then turned. I slid the brick along the fuse and lit it closer to the pot. Then I stood. Almost. I leaned heavily on the table. The sword wasn't long enough to be a walking stick. I put more weight on my bad leg. It folded under me, and I caught at the table. One can ignore pain, but when the body invokes weakness, determination is useless. I hopped and lurched toward the door. I wanted to be behind it, out of sight when they entered. They'd come in. I'd close the door and keep them there until Shade's little pot gave up its lightning. I made it to the door just as it opened a crack. I leaned against the wall and held my breath.
Fitz? It's me, Purr. Don't kill me.
He stepped in, with Spark peering over his shoulder. I had no time to curse at them. I lunged for the firepot at the same moment that Spark saw it. As I toppled like a cut tree, she stepped past me, slid the firebrick from under the fuse, and flipped the brick over. She evaluated the fuse on the pot.
We have enough time, she said. Pick him up, Purr. We'll backtrack in his blood and be away from here before it goes off.
She nodded to me. It's not a bad plan. She seized one of the chairs and dragged it so that the back blocked the view of the table from the door. Nothing for them to see to warn them. Let's go. I tried to think of a reason to argue with her. Purr already had my arm across his shoulder. He stood, dragging me up with him. The lad had grown stronger. Spark poked the firebrick and then picked it up.
It's cooling already, she said. Elderling magic. Amazing stuff.
With swift efficiency, she resettled it in the pack. I started to object, but she held up the unlit firepot.
I'm not stupid, she said, and set it upright on the cooled brick.
She slung the pack over my shoulder.
Go, now.
We went, though not as swiftly as I would have wished. I leaned on Purr and hobbled. Spark inserted herself under my sword arm. She was barely tall enough to take the weight off my bad leg. She drew the door closed behind us.
Wish I had time to lock it, she muttered.
My heart sank as I saw the next door open and Lant put his head out. Spark made an impatient motion of her hand, and he closed it softly. I tried to move faster. The rhythmic slap of running feet.
Drop me! Run!
I ordered them. No one listened to me.
Hurry!
Purr suggested. Spark glanced back.
No! Stop and face them.
No! Purr objected, but she held my arm tight to her shoulder, and I found myself pivoting on my good leg as she spun me around.
What are you doing?
Purr cried out.
Trust me,
a hissed whisper.
Swords up!
I lifted mine with an effort. Get clear, I warned Purr, and at last he obeyed me. I could not walk, but I could balance, somewhat.
Else balls!
Purr's voice went guttural.
They have bows!
Of course they do. Spark laughed darkly. They halted well out of sword range, a dozen of them, tall, well-made warriors. Four with bows, six with swords. Their leader barked,
Capra wants the man taken alive. Shoot the other two.
Run, I suggested.
Get behind Fitz,
Spark said, and seized Purr to drag him in as she stepped behind me.
And hold here, she whispered. Not much longer. Hold, hold, hold.
The archers were fanning out and advancing. I would not block their arrows for long. They would kill Spark and Purr.
Hold, hold,
whispered Spark. The door and the wall leapt out at them as I flew backward, landing on my companions.
In the next instant, the ceiling came down, scorched wood and some stone. A blast of heat and stinging dust struck me, blinding me as the roar numbed my ears. My face felt burnt. I dragged a sleeve across my eyes and blinked, expecting to find enemies charging. I still couldn't see. Tears streamed from my eyes. I sat up slowly as Purr and Spark squirmed out from under me. The hazy corridor held only the shattered wall and collapsed ceiling and the smoldering beam that leaned across it. I felt a rain of fine debris. Spark said something.
"What?
That worked well?"
she shouted. I nodded and found a stupid grin spreading across my face.
"It did. Let's go."
Purr helped me up. His face was reddened from the blast, but he managed to smile. I felt something sting the back of my neck and slapped it. I brushed a dart away, looked at it in surprise, but Spark was already screaming.
"Where? More of those bastards! Swords up!"
Shade's firepot blast had deafened us, so we had not heard the patter of running feet. A dozen guards had come up on us from behind, completing the pincer movement I had feared. Four in the front line raised brass-bound tubes to their lips. A blast of those horns would summon more guards. "Kill them first. Fight like cornered wolves," I agreed with Night Eyes. I raised my sword, and Purr and I lurched toward them, roaring as the trumpeters puffed their cheeks. But before they could sound their horns, another fall of burning ceiling drove Purr to his knees and sent me hopping sideways. The guards wavered as a rush of heat rolled past us, and I heard no blast of horns. Was I that deafened? But I felt a tiny impact, and I looked down to see a dart dangling from my vest. Spark shook another from her hair. It fell away as I hopped in, sword feebly swinging. My blade bit into one before I staggered sideways and fell. Purr leapt to stand over me, thrusting and yelling. Spark charged, shrieking as she attacked. The door to the dungeon swung open right beside them. I roared my dismay. They'd betray themselves. We'd all die. But it was not Lant who came out, blade in hand, but Bee. She pointed her knife at them, but that was not her weapon. She widened her eyes and stared at them.
"Go away, go away, go away. Be scared, run away."
Verity's strength, without his wisdom or control. I slammed my walls against her wild skilling. Purr stared in astonishment as our enemy threw down weapons and fled. I thrashed myself forward, barely catching one of Spark's ankles. She slammed to the floor hard as I tripped her, but in an instant she was flailing and trying to crawl away from me.
"Bee, stop! Spark, not you! You don't run away, Spark!"
"Spark, I didn't mean you!"
Bee did not know how to turn down her power. Spark leapt like a hooked fish and then was still, eyes wide. Like Verity, Bee could influence those whose skill ability was so low they had never even been aware of it. Once my king had used that power to convince captains to turn away from the six duchies or to steer their red warships onto rocks. Now my daughter sent warriors fleeing and stunned her allies.
"Inside," I told them. "Purr, bring Spark."
I hobble-hopped to the door as he grabbed Spark under the arms and dragged her.
"Get inside, Bee."
My daughter held the door wide as Lant thrust his head out.
"What happened?"
His voice was white with terror. His voice seemed a whisper.
"A fire pot brought the ceiling down, and Bee can skill strongly. That was her you felt, but she doesn't know how to target. She frightened off a patrol, but when they come to their senses, if they do, they'll know where we are."
"I'm so sorry, Fitz. Prilcott was showing me the bricked-up entrance. I told her to stay close." He had my arm and dragged me in.
"My father needed me,"
Bee explained.
"Bee made them run away?"
Purr asked. He let Spark slide to the floor as he slammed the door shut behind us. We stood in the stillness of the guard chamber. My ears were still ringing.
"Spark!"
Lant cried, his heart in his voice as his wits returned to him. He knelt by her, crying.
"Where is she hurt?"
"She is skill stunned. I think she'll come around in a few minutes. Bee, no one is angry. You saved our lives. Come here, please, come here."
Per was ignoring the rest of us as he pushed the guard's table against the door. I dodged the chair he flung at it to hobble toward B. She had retreated to a corner of the room, both her hands lifted to cover her shamed face.
I didn't mean to hurt her, and now they know where we are hiding.
No, you saved us. You saved all of us. She darted to me, and for a fleeting instant, I held my child in my arms, and she clung to me, believing I could protect her. For a breath, I felt like a good father. The fool came up the steps.
What happened?
He demanded.
Down the steps, Lant commanded.
He had dragged a dazed Spark to her feet. Her eyes were open, and she looked confused. A good sign, I decided. Bits of paint were already flaking down as the cracks in the ceiling above us ran and widened. If the ceiling comes down, we're trapped down there, I reminded him. Even if the ceiling fall hadn't blocked the corridor out there, we haven't any hope of getting out past the guards and gates. This is our only chance, small as it is. Come on.
I do not like this. Nor I.
The fool came to help me follow them. Lant went through with Spark holding tight to his arm. Per put a last chair in his stack of furniture and came to join us.
You have magic?
Per asked B as she held the door for us.
And you do not. I am so glad. I would have made you run away from us.
For just an instant, a smile crossed her face. It was Molly's smile in that little scarred face. My heart broke.
Never,
the boy promised her, and his grin was wide. It was all she saw. Behind me, a corner of the ceiling came down, smoking and stinking, and effectively blocking the outer door. I felt a wash of heat with it, pushing Bee and me toward the steps. Per closed the door behind us.
Well, I doubt we need to fear any enemies coming at us from that direction.
He sounded almost cheerful. I said nothing to contradict him, but I knew that smoldering wood would catch the walls on fire. We were truly trapped now. Bee and Per descended before us. I looked down the steps.
Lean on me,
the fool bade me. At every step the gash on my thigh gaped. There was light below, but not much. I caught a whiff of fragrant pine oil before the prison stench drowned it. Then I felt an immense thud, as if a giant horse had kicked the wall and the door jumped in its frame. I judged that more of the ceiling had come down. That was it. We were trapped and would die here if we did not find another escape route.
No going back,
the fool said. I nodded numbly. We reached the bottom and I sat on the lowest step. The fool sat down beside me and B came to my other side. Here we were, all of us alive, for now. I put my arm around her and drew her close. For an instant, she stiffened at my touch. Then she leaned into me. For a time, I just sat there. My strength was at a low ebb. But B was here. My child was beside me. Above us, fire and falling walls and a furious enemy. Down here, chill and dank and dimness. We were caged in by stone and sea. Prilcop crouched beside the prisoners he had freed. They sat together in one cell, ragged and round-shouldered, huddled close on a single pallet. I could not hear what he was saying to them. Across the room, a shaky Spark inspected a section of the wall. I watched her and Lant run their hands over the stonework, rub at the scratched mortar, and shake their heads. They looked discouraged.
We may have to use a fire pot, Lant suggested.
Spark rubbed her eyes and gingerly shook her head.
Last resort, she said loudly. Unless we could put it inside the wall, more of the force would come at us than into the stone. Shade Noy did many tests. If we buried the pot, it blasted a hole. On top of the ground, it made a wide, shallow indentation. It could as easily bring the ceiling down on us.
I'm so tired,
Bee said. I could barely hear her. So am I. The Karis seed had already faded, leaving its darkness and weariness.
Wolf Father is with you now?
Yes.
Yes. Her name for Night Eyes made me smile at her.
What is he?
I didn't know. He's good, I said. I sensed approval from him.
He is,
she agreed. She waited for me to say more. I shrugged at her, and a smile flickered across her face. Then she asked,
Are we safe here?
Safe enough. For now, I told her. I studied her face. Her eyes widened. Almost defiantly, she said,
I know what I look like. I'm not pretty anymore.
You never were, I told her. I shook my head at her. The fool gasped at my cruelty, and Bee's eyes went wide in shock. You were and are beautiful, I said. I freed a hand to touch her lumpy ear. Every scar a victory. I see you had many of them. She straightened her back.
Every time they beat me, I tried to hurt them back. Wolffather told me that. Make them fear me, he said. So I did. I bit a hole in Dwalia's face.
That shocked me to silence, but the fool leaned in and said,
Oh, well done. Would that I could have done that myself.
He smiled at her.
Do you like your father's nose?
She looked up at me, and I fingered the break in it. She had never seen it any other way.
What's wrong with it? She asked in puzzlement.
Nothing at all, the fool told her merrily. I've always told people there's nothing wrong with his nose.
He laughed out loud, and both Lant and Spark turned to regard us in surprise. I didn't understand his joke, but their expressions made me laugh, and even Bee smiled, in the way one does at a madman. She leaned closer and closed her eyes. The pain from my leg came in surges with my heartbeat. Rest, 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 said the pain. I knew I could not. My body wanted to sleep, to heal, but now was not the time. I needed to get up, to help the others, but Bee was slumped against me, and I didn't want to move her. I leaned back and the last fire pot in the belt poked me. Help me, I said, and the fool tugged it off me. Bee didn't stir. I looked down at her little face. Her eyes were closed. Her disfigurement told a dreadful tale. Scars, some months old, some fresh, distorted her face. I wanted to touch the cut at the corner of her mouth and heal it. No, don't wake her. I realized I was leaning heavily on the fool. I lifted my head to look at him.
Did we win?
He asked me. His smile was lopsided in his swollen face. The fight isn't over until you win, I said. Burrick's words. Spoken to me so long ago. I touched my leg, warm and wet. I was hungry and thirsty and so tired. But I had them both beside me, alive, still bleeding and my ears ringing, but alive. Across the room, Lant was grinding at mortar with his knife. Purr knelt on the floor beside him, likewise digging at a seam. Spark had crossed to a rack of tools meant for tearing flesh, not stone. Her upper lip curled back as she selected one of the black iron implements. I turned my gaze away from that and met the fool's eyes.
I should go help them,
he said. Not yet. He gave me a questioning look. Let me have this moment, all of you here with me, just for a short time. A smile suddenly came to me. I have news for you, I told him. I found I could still grin. Fool, I'm a grandfather. Nettle has a baby girl now. Hope. Isn't that a wonderful name?
You, a grandfather,
he smiled with me.
Hope, a perfect name.
For a time we sat together in silence. I was so weary, and danger still threatened. But that did not steal the sweetness of being here, alive, with them. I was so tired, and my leg hurt. Nonetheless, I had this moment. I slipped into the wolf's enjoyment of the immediate. Rest a moment. I will keep watch. I didn't realize I had dozed until I twitched awake. I was thirsty and ravenously hungry. B was holding my hand and was asleep against me. Skin to skin, I felt my daughter as a part of me. I smiled.